Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
We're back with another edition of the WFNY podcast, brought to you by Evergreen Podcast. And with the Francisco Lindor trade, the Browns in the playoffs, obviously, I brought Sportsnam on to talk Cavs, right?
Everybody wants to talk about Damian Dotson. Damian Dotson is what Cleveland fans are asking to hear about.
Yeah, so I figured we'd talk Cavs a little bit with Jeff here. And by the way, we are live on Facebook, Twitter, Periscope, YouTube, anywhere you want to obviously talk Cavs, because that is the number one subject in Cleveland sports right now.
There's probably more places to watch us than people wanting to talk Cavs right now.
True. At least,
Might need people to log on to two platforms just to make us feel a little bit better here.
True.
No, actually, I think people are excited. It's been a good start.
So yeah,
I think
the Cavs, 8 games in the season. They're dealing with a bunch of injuries. We'll get into that, but they're dealing with a bunch of injuries, and they're still 4-4. And even when they're losing, they're still fun and competitive. We could not say that last season.
It's the least Cavsian thing of all time. Like, just like pretty much competence. I was actually, when you asked me to come on, I was actually thinking to myself, like, there's not that much to talk about. They're kind of just boringly competent, right? Like, the young guys are progressing pretty well. The roster's not bad. The vets are playing pretty well. They're winning some games that, you know, they're losing some. Like, they're this is the least interesting the Cavs have been in a long time in terms of just pure entertainment value.
I don't know if that's – I feel like that's a compliment, though, especially after, like, the last two seasons.
There's been no – I forget who tweeted it the other day. Like, they are not the Cavs. You know how everybody accidentally tweets Cavs instead of Cavs? Like, there's been no Cavs.
No Cavs.
It's been no Cavs this year. It's all Cavs, and that's a huge improvement. You know, I can't ask for more. Just boring competence is just a massive step up.
That's definitely progress, but that also shows you how bad it's been since LeBron left as well. That being boring and being competitive is like five steps in the right direction.
Right. And I'll take it. I'll take every second of it. But it is kind of funny after the last couple of years of just having constant, like, you never know that. Like, for a while there, it was like, if you got a Woj bomb, if you got that notification hitting your phone, like, there was a decent chance it was about the Cavs. Like, I feel like we were like 20% of all Woj bombs. You know, like, for there being 30 teams, our ratio of Woj bombs was massive. And I don't feel like when I get the Woj bomb anymore, I don't think it's going to be Cavs. I don't think it's going to be Cavs related.
All right, now here's the first. I'll make fun of the Indians probably a couple times tonight just because they're easy to make fun of on a day like today. But it's weird to see that the Indians are salary dumping while the Cavs are competitive. Who saw that coming in 2020?
Yeah, I know. It's crazy how quickly the Indians have fallen, you know, out of favor from going from the competent team for years while everyone else was terrible, and now all of a sudden they're catching theirs.
They're still competent, I guess you'd say. But yeah, enough with the Indian stock. That will just bring me down. But the Cavs, so the number one player, which, by the way, we are recording this on Thursday night. The Cavs play tonight. So obviously, if you're listening to this Friday morning or
some Cavs play tonight. A couple of the Cavs play tonight.
That's what I was going to bring up. If Colin Sexton is currently questionable, if he misses the game tonight, the Cavs will not only start their eighth different lineup in 9 games, but they will be without 7 rotation players. Like, what? I don't know if that's bad luck. I don't even know. And none of them are due to COVID. They're all injuries.
Yeah, that's one of the craziest things. Like, if you told me there would be games where we'd be without 7 guys, I'd be like, yeah. And, like, those games are probably still coming. Like, they're still going to be the COVID games, I'm sure, right? Like, it's hitting all the sports. It's hitting everybody. It's hitting the whole world, right? Like, there's going to be a couple of weeks of the season where we're without a bunch of guys. But this is, like, independent of all that. It's, like, insane. And we play. Do we play Memphis? Is that right?
Yeah, Memphis without.
And they're without a bunch of guys.
Yeah,
or Jaren Jackson, who's still out. So
true.
If people aren't watching this one, I don't think anybody can get too mad at him.
Just because it's sports. But yeah, watching the Cavs and Cavs without 7 rotational, 6 rotation guys, possibly 7, and Memphis without Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson among others is not entertaining.
No. And this is a game that, like, in a stacked draft with a team that still needs, like, the superstar, you kind of hope they lose this one, right? Like, this is the game to lose.
We weren't supposed to talk about this 5 minutes into the podcast.
Lose the games where nobody's playing. Those are the ones, like, that's fine. Get those losses out of the way. Win all the games where, you know, the guys that you need to win are winning. See, that, this is how they got to play it this year.
That's how you tank without actually tanking.
Right. Accidental tanking is the best kind.
Or an injury. I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about. But yeah, so speaking of Colin Sexton, he has looked really good this year. I'll be the first to say he's looked really good. Ever since they drafted him, I feel like everyone thought that he could possibly turn into this kind of player just because of his work ethic. But he has turned into like a bona fide scorer. And even though he's not essentially the point guard, he can still create shots for himself. He's still getting guys open. I know Carter Rodriguez tweeted something, I think it was last week. Colin Sexton is a lot better off the ball than he is with the ball in his hands. And it's perfect if you have a guy like Darius Garland. And it's proven because he scored 20 points at least in all 8 games this year.
It's funny how, and it probably is still true long term, but how we all said that Sexton and Garland can't coexist. We're going to have to kind of pick one. And you know what? Long term, that is probably still going to be true. But in the short term this season, when they've had a lot of success, it seems like they've looked much better together. Where you have Garland able to get the guys into the set, move the ball, collapse defense a little bit, and then Sexton moving off the ball, finishing plays, has really been one of, you know, something that's been really successful and put them both in positions where they've looked really good. And it's funny because that's the opposite of what we all kind of assumed was going to be happening. So that's been good and helpful. And maybe they can coexist a little bit long term. But with Sexton playing like this, it feels like you have a shot every night because he's going to put up
really 20 points. It really does. Like, if you would have told me that Sexton would be averaging in the high 20s and score at least 20 points a night the first 8 games of the season, I would have been like, there has to be like no one else on the court. But I mean, and he's not really
shooting now.
Yeah, and it's not just because he's shooting a lot either. He's very efficient. I'll have to look up his stats exactly, but he's been a very efficient scorer.
And it's interesting because he scored a lot last year, and it was I think he was about average efficiently, maybe a tick above. And this year, you know, he's only grown on that. But it does feel like a difference this year in just like the eye test side of things, where last year he kind of did his scoring off on the like, yes, Colin Sexton is scoring over here, but I don't know that it's contributing to the larger picture. But this year it feels like it contributes to the larger picture a lot more. He's taking over in some fourth quarters. He's making big shots. He's picking up, you know, when the offense needs it, he's coming in and scoring. But he's not taking over the games in a way that maybe he used to just, and you still see it a little bit, you know, he'd sit there and pound it and just, it was a Colin Sexton show. But it seems like he's finding ways to exist within the larger scope of the team much better than what he did in the past. And it's helping him be efficient. It's helping him be more impactful, both in the ways you can measure and in the ways it's a little bit harder to measure.
Yeah, I mean, watching him be able to, like, not only create his own shot, but just score like he has. I don't know. 8 games is obviously a small sample size, but it's also worth mentioning that he's shooting 53% overall and 52% from three. I mean, I don't think anyone saw this coming, no matter how. I mean, I know there are rumors that him and Darius Garland looked really good in the offseason, but the offseason is the offseason. I don't think anyone saw this type of jump coming from him in the season, even if it is only 8 games.
Yeah, and it's interesting. When he used to drive to the rim, he used to be a little bit reckless. He used to just kind of get blocked or just go nowhere, and there'd be a lot of shaking your head. And I feel like every time he does that now, it goes in. Like, he's really figured out how to go in there, absorb some contact, draw some fouls, and finish in a way that makes his speed that much more impactful. When he first came in, there was a lot of like De'Aaron Fox comparisons, and I always thought, well, Fox is such a violent finisher. Like, he goes up, he plays above the rim, he can really, you know, he can score when he gets to the hole. Like, the defense has to be scared, whereas Sexton, I felt like, would go in there without so much of a plan and not be able to finish above guys and really struggle. And it seems like he's getting much better in that area, as well as adding like that kind of little floater in between push shot kind of thing. That's been helpful as well.
We need to name it. I just love that description that you just made. That was awesome. I hope that's used. Yeah, I hope that's used more often. But speaking of, this conversation is for another day, but speaking of De'Aaron Fox and Colin Sexton comparisons, it's worth noting that Fox got a max extension this past summer. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to try to jinx anything, but it's just worth noting. Yeah, it's just worth noting that De'Aaron Fox received that max extension this past summer.
Yeah, I think it's coming. I mean, Sexton's 22. We saw guys like Fox and Murray and Mitchell and some guys who put up very similar kind of stat lines, you know, get those big deals. Even like a Jaylen Brown, who's a very different player, but still, you know, young, productive kind of guy. They get paid because they're the most valuable asset in the world, right? A young guy who you think could be your lead scorer is going to get paid. And so whether it's the full max, I don't know. You know, De'Aaron Fox was a little bit more polished, provide a little bit more on the offensive side. You know, he's a real point guard, but he's going to get paid. I think people just need to, I think people just need to be extremely prepared for how much he's going to get paid, because it's not going to be a little bit of money. It's not going to be $20 million a year. It's definitely going to be north of that, I would say.
And if he keeps this up, I don't even think I would. I mean, it's so weird in the NBA how there's a max extension, because like a guy like LeBron receives the max. So you can't compare if Colin Sexton gets it to LeBron. But it's just like you have to compare him to De'Aaron Fox, just like we said. Mm-hmm. And if he keeps progressing like he is so far, I think it's well worth it. I mean, I guess you could say it's not well worth money as a small shooting guard, but if he progresses like he has and he continues to get better, I think it's well worth the money.
Right. And listen, these are much better problems than I thought we were going to have last year. But it's going to put you in a situation where you're going to have to kind of figure out that he and Garland can coexist together. If not, which one of them you're going to prioritize? You know, can you build a team around a 6'1" shooting guard? You know, those questions are going to have to be answered at some point. And I think this draft will probably answer a lot of those. Because, not to skip ahead of the season, which is a fun season and guys are playing great, but there's a lot of really good tall point guards coming out, right? Cade and Jalen Suggs and stuff. So, you know, if the Cavs land one or two somehow in the lottery, there's going to be more decisions going to have to be made at that spot too. So it is a big year for decisions being made about these guys. Going in, I was hoping that Sexton or Garland would prove themselves worth building around. I didn't really dream that both would. So this is absolutely best case scenario for the Cavs right now. So, yeah. That's definitely a good thing.
For us to be talking about a Colin Sexton max extension is definitely a good thing. I mean, like you said, right. If you would have told me last year at this time that we'd be having this discussion right now, I would have said that you were drunk, because there's mm-hmm. no way the way that he was looking. Mm-hmm. And I just wish the perfect scenario would be Colin Sexton being about 3 or 4 inches taller, and the Garland, I'll say it, the Sexland backcourt would be perfect. It seriously would.
Yeah.
The biggest problem is just the height.
And, you know, Sexton's long, which helps a little bit, but I don't know that he's ever going to be a big. I'd like to see where his defense gets in a year or two, because he's got all the physical tools. He's got the kind of attitude, you know, going 100 mile an hour all the time. But I think a lot of defenses feel. And I think it's fair to say that the one thing on Sexton's game that he doesn't have a ton of is feel. He can go get a bucket. He's super athletic. He does a lot of good things on the court. And he started to create some turnovers and stuff too, you know, and that's great. But I don't know that feel is ever going to be his strongest point on the court. And so I want to see where his defense gets, because Garland physically doesn't have a profile to be a super great defensive point guard, even if his feel for the game is much higher. So it's going to be weird to see how those two could coexist if you're going to get a Dame and CJ kind of thing going on, where it just puts the rest of your defense at a disadvantage, because those two just... It's just really hard to stack them up next to each other and figure out how it's going to work. But in the short term, I think it's perfectly fine. I like that they're working together well. I like they're both succeeding. But it's going to create a lot of questions down the road.
The NBA is going toward the small lineup much more ever since the death lineup in Golden State.
Except for the Cavs. They're playing JaVale and Drummond at the same time.
You know? Yeah, so. I would say. And then you had the Cavs playing JaVale, Drummond, and then two small guards as their point guard and shooting guard. So, like, they went to, like, both extremes.
Right. It's kind of funny. I mean, I guess, you know, wings are the hardest thing to find. So, stack up on the cheaper stuff that's easier to find.
Speaking of wins and defense, Isaac Okoro, I know he hasn't played much, unfortunately. He's only played 3 games so far out of the 8. He's known for his defense. He's known for being an off-the-ball kind of guy on offense, which perfectly plays into the Sexland backcourt. And you brought up Jaylen Brown earlier as well. I feel like his, if he can be a Jaylen Brown type, that is perfect for this team, especially with the backcourt that they have.
Oh, for sure. And it's fun to watch a guy, you know, we're talking about feel, like he's a guy with a ton of feel for the game. He's having a ton of impact without putting up numbers, without necessarily making plays that, you know, without finishing plays. He's just doing a ton out there to keep things moving, to help on the defensive end, making the little hustle plays. So I could definitely see him being a slow burn guy, especially because he doesn't force himself on games at all. In fact, it would be interesting if Sexton didn't play tonight because it might force Okoro to put the ball in his hand and see what he can do a little bit more. Because I feel like we've seen.
I know we might have Andre Drummond point guard tonight if Sexton and Garland are both out.
Point Drummond. I'm all in on Point Drummond. Only if JaVale plays the two.
I'm in it just for the entertainment factor.
But Okoro's been spectacular in the small you know portions that we've seen him. I think his floor right now is pretty clearly pretty high, just in terms of a defender, an impact guy on that side, and then you're hoping he can add the offensive things like a Jaylen Brown. You know, that slow burn, keep getting a little bit better every year, and all of a sudden, you know, Jaylen Brown's a freaking stud this year. So the hope is he can just keep adding to that. He has the feel, he has a lot of skill. He doesn't force himself on games at all right now. So I'm hoping as the year goes on, he gets comfortable. He starts taking the ball a little bit and we can see what he can do off the bounce and doing a little bit more with the ball in his hand.
The good thing about Okoro is that he's very, I know this is cliche. He's very coachable. He's a great defender. And he, like you said, he has a good feel for the game and he's good at finishing at the rim. Those four things aren't really teachable, but shooting is teachable and you can develop it. So I feel like if he were to have four of the five, I'd want him to have the four that he currently has and then develop a shot.
Yeah. And he has cool hair. I think we might lead the NBA in cool hair. We've got to be up there. We got to see what KPJ is up to when he comes back. I feel like he was really holding up a lot there as well.
I feel like KPJ, if he comes back, is like a huge question mark, but we'll get to that as well.
Yeah, but yeah, Okoro's been spectacular. He has, like you said, like some really, really important fundamental skills that just make his floor. I think just that his floor is really, really high because you can see he has the talent, the skills, the feel to be out there. And then it's just, where does it go from there? You know, how much more can he add to that? But it's a really, really good place to start from. And so, like, after watching Sexton's rookie year and Garland's rookie year, like, it's great to start from this point because those were rough, right? And we came out of those years not really sure what we had and with a lot more hope of just, well, I hope they get to, you know, it's kind of the level Okoro's already at. Like, I feel like he's reaching a level where you're already feeling pretty comfortable with him and then he can just add to that.
Yeah. And I feel like I know Sexton, he's known for his work ethic. That's been known ever since the Cavs drafted him. I feel like having a guy that like that, that has shown that work ethic leads to what Sexton has done already, is only like if Okoro follows along on that same path, I feel like that's only good things to come, especially if Sexton continues to develop.
Yeah, and I appreciate that the front office is kind of stacking those guys, you know, like let's find guys who will just work, who will reach their highest potential because we know that they'll put in the effort and get them together, which creates an environment where maybe you can pull in some guys who don't have that same level and they get in that environment where Okoro's in the gym all the time, Sexton's in the gym all the time. You know, you've heard Garland's a gym rat in this pre-draft stuff. So if they get around that, all those guys are working out all the time. You hope that the environment is just set for anybody you bring in to kind of get sucked into that and reach their potential as well.
It's all about the culture, which I feel like JB Bickerstaff, not John Beilein. It's still weird that John Beilein was the Cavs head coach a year ago.
That was rough. That was Cavs. We talked about whether it's Cavs or Cabs. That was Cabs.
True. That was like beyond. That was like Cabs with like 10 Bs.
Yeah, it was.
It's still weird to think that John Beilein was once the head coach of the Cavaliers, and it was like last season.
Yeah,
it feels so long ago.
So many things have happened in like that short span of NBA life that it's just outlandish. But yeah, and I've been extremely happy with JB, and the players clearly love him. From a culture standpoint, you can tell that the players talk about him different than they talked about like a Beilein, right? And so I think that's really good. And it's one of those things with like Altman and JB where I don't know how good they are yet. I don't know that I would argue either one is great or anything like that. But in terms of that competency that we were talking about, this franchise just needed to get to like mediocre, right? Like we just needed to
huge step in the right direction.
Right. Just stop flailing. Like just get some pieces and culture in there that is just stabilizing. And I think that they've done a really good job of that this season. Like, okay, things are starting to be stabilized. Things are starting to feel like a normal basketball team would feel, which is foreign to the Cavs for as long as I think I've been following them. But just getting to that point is really good. I think Bickerstaff was a really big, huge part of that. And, you know, how far will he take us? I don't know. He hasn't had success elsewhere, but he seems to be doing a lot of great stuff here. You know, that the coach taking you from bad to mediocre is often not the coach that takes you from mediocre to great. But this is the most important step because you can't get to great without skipping a step unless LeBron comes to your team randomly after 4 years away, right? So, you know, I think he's been really good for this team and it is exactly what they needed.
It really is. I mean, when they hired JB full-time and gave him that extension, I was like,
yeah.
But so far, not only like as the culture, but it's clear that the players not only love him, but he's helping the guys develop, especially the young guys, which is most important, obviously. I mean, the Cavs want to win now, I guess, maybe. But it's important. The most important thing is that the young guys continue to develop. And it's worth mentioning that the Cavs currently, I know their competition hasn't been the best, but they currently have the third best defensive rating in the NBA right now.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. Even if you would have said that they were top 10, I would have said that you were a liar prior to the season and looking back at last season. Yeah, right now it's number 3. I don't care who they've played. That is a huge step as well.
Right, and I think they've simplified some things, and they've played a system that makes more sense. They have 2 7-footers back there. So, you know, you play some drop coverage, your guards are going to get beat some, but you have a big guy back there to clean up some of the mess, and I think that helps some. And I think that's, you know, I've heard, you know, Carter Rodriguez, you were mentioning earlier, those Chasetown guys talking about, but Tristan was amazing, and I wish he was still on the team, but he's a very different defensive kind of player than a JaVale or an Andre Drummond. And I think the current guys make a lot of sense for what's going on right now and what they're being asked to do in a way that Tristan maybe didn't as much. Tristan's much, much better at like the highest level. If I was going into a playoff series, I would want Tristan over Drummond on my defense. But for what the Cavs are trying to do right now, those guys make more sense. And it just, in all seriousness, this is the first time the roster's made any sense. Since LeBron left, we've been in asset collection mode, right? It's just assets, expiring contracts, draft picks, just picking best player available. And this is the first year where it's like, okay, Andre Drummond is your 5. That makes sense. He's a legitimate NBA 5. Isaac Okoro is your 3. We're not trying to play Jetty there. We're not trying to play KPJ. We're not, you know, Jetty was playing the 4 a bunch, not just recently. You know, we're actually putting guys in positions that make sense, that fit what they're trying to do in the NBA. And I think that we're seeing a lot of that as well. Just a roster that finally makes a little bit more sense than maybe it used to.
And as we've said already, that is a huge step in the right direction.
Right. Literally just having players at positions. That's what we've done. This is the big puzzle that they figured out.
And just like we all saw coming, JaVale McGee, the 3-point shooter as well. Man, so not only do we have Andre Drummond playing point guard, possibly, which would be awesome, but we have JaVale McGee shooting threes and making them.
Stretch JaVale. I threw a hissy fit when they traded for JaVale McGee, and he's been great. So, you know, that shows my initial reactions are always awful. I need to sleep on things before I tweet. I never will, but I should definitely sleep on things before
I tweet. I feel like that's what... If everyone slept on things and before they tweeted, Twitter would be a lot better place.
You should have to submit your tweet. You submit your tweet and then like within, it's like you wait 2 hours and then it tweets. So that
you can... It would be like, have you slept yet? Yes or no?
Yeah, right. Are you
sure? Seriously though, and after like trades, you shouldn't be allowed to tweet about a team within 2 hours of a trade.
Yes.
I feel like there'd be so many better takes.
Yes. Just everybody take a step back.
Seriously,
that's no fun.
But yeah, I'm the third best defensive rating is still just crazy to me, especially because they've been without Isaac Okoro, who's known as a defensive player. I mean, if he comes back and is fully healthy, I think they can keep a top 10 defensive rating, which is like we said multiple times already. That is a huge step in the right direction.
Right, and the effort's there, which is the biggest thing. You know, even as they're going to hit take their lumps all season, right? Like the hot start was great, but this is going to be a team that loses more games than it wins on the whole. But the effort level has been amazing. If they can keep that up, the defense is going to stay good, and they're going to just have a chance every night. They're going to be a pesky team. You know, we haven't had a team that was pesky and a bunch of tryhards in a long time. So that's really good. And Drummond's been spectacular compared to what I think we all maybe expected. You know, the opinion on guys shifts a lot, and he went from all-star to almost, you know, a laughingstock, but he's a solid player, and he's been really dialing up on the defensive end. It's been really good to see.
His problem is that he's known as a defensive guy, defensive big guy that gets rebounds. And in today's NBA, that's just like not really thought of. Well, I guess Rudy Gobert, but he's really good at it.
Drummond's not Rudy Gobert, you know, like he's not doing what Gobert's doing out there. Drummond, like the idea of Drummond is much better than what you actually see. True. Right.
I like that. But the idea is much better than the actual in real life experience.
Yeah. But he's been playing really, really well. He's creating a ton of turnovers. He's blocking some shots. He's been, you know, he's been doing exactly what they need.
And this conversation's for another day, because the trade deadline's still a couple months out, I think. But it will be interesting to see if Andre Drummond's traded. I'm assuming he will be. I'm expiring. But it will be interesting to see what a playoff team gives up for Drummond. Like, yeah, what the Cavs would receive.
His contract is so big, it limits, you know, how many things you can do, how many teams can get up to that salary number to even make a trade. I think the odds of an extension have gone up quite a bit. I think before the season, if you told me, you know, what were the odds that they were going to sign Drummond to an extension, I would have said zero. I think they want him out as soon as possible. Or, you know, I think they'll get him out as soon as possible. And now, the way things have clicked, I do think that there's a little bit more possibility of that. I wouldn't expect it. I don't think it's, like, more likely than not. But I think that you know, we were talking about the Woj bombs. They weren't Cavs-related recently. That's one I could see coming through.
I don't know how much money I'd give him, but I guess, I mean, the Cavs literally have nothing at center, especially after this season with JaVale McGee out.
Right.
Kevin Love, who knows? I mean, I hope he can come back and play. Who knows what's going to be up with Kevin Love? You literally have no centers.
And that's why, you know, a short deal would be awesome. I would overpay him on a 2-year deal as a bridge to something else pretty easily.
I'm done with that.
You know, I don't want to give him 4 years. 80 million or 4 years, 70 million, whatever it would take to get him. You know, Steven Adams just signed for what, 17 and a half per year. So, you know, assuming Drummond got somewhere around that on an average per year, but like 2 years, 50 million. Like, yeah,
I would say 2 years, like 45 or 50 million. I'm cool with that too, because Colin Sexton will be coming up on an extension. But besides that, you don't really have any key pieces coming up that need an extension in the next 3 years. I mean, right. Garland, I guess, in like 2 years, but that's it.
But yeah, you're far enough away, and he and Love would expire around the same time then, and you can figure out what you want to do, you know, at that point. So I think a short-term deal while you figure out what's going on makes a ton of sense. But I would love to hold off to the draft, because, again, you know, there's an Evan Mobley sitting out there when you pick. Say you have the third or fourth pick, and he's who's on the board. Well, then maybe you don't need Drummond around you as much, and you can just get a stopgap while you bring Mobley along. So I do feel like a lot of the Cavs' decisions need to wait on this draft and where they land and who's available. Unless they're just way too good. If they get halfway through the season and they banked way too many wins, it doesn't look like they're going to be at the top lotto team, you know, then you can start doing some things. But if it goes like it looks, you know, if we're looking like we're going to be a bottom five team and staring at a top 5-6 pick, then I think they need to kind of hold off and see what's going on there.
I think at full strength, the Cavs can be a fringe playoff team, like play for the playing games. But with the injuries racking up as they are, and if KPJ is not back till who knows when, if Kevin Love's out for a while, which it seems like he might be, Darius Garland and Colin Sexton should be back somewhat soon. Well, Colin Sexton should be back like very soon.
Yeah, he might be back.
Darius Garland is a week or two. I feel like at full strength, yeah, they could be a fringe playoff team, but it just all comes down to injuries. If they keep getting hurt, they're going to be a top 5 pick in the NBA draft.
And they've already lost a couple, you know, Exum's out for an extended period. Love's already out for an extended period. So, you know, that's a bummer. You start stacking these little nicks on top of those, and it gets hard because then you don't have much of a roster. And I haven't heard anything about Delly. What's going on with Delly? Have you heard any updates? I have
no idea. That's like the same thing with KPJ.
It's been weeks.
Yeah, and they keep saying like, oh yeah, he's been ruled out tomorrow, parentheses, concussion. That's such a weird, because like he re-signed here, so like it's not like they just have him on contract and like let him go home. You know what I mean?
And we're desperate for point guards. It's not like we have somebody else to play that spot. You know, it's not like he wasn't going to play anyway. Like we could really use some Delly minutes right now, right?
Especially tonight. If Sexton's out, we could really use Delly. That's how dire the situation is.
He might start tonight if he was healthy. So that I do wish we had a little bit more update on that. Like the KPJ thing is, there's clearly like a lot going on that's not basketball related there, right? And so I don't care to pry all that much. KPJ lives like separate from the rest of my Cavs thoughts because it's hard to include him in any real, you know, future thoughts right now. But Delly's a guy that we could use right now, and there's kind of this weird lingering injury. So I do hope that he comes back sooner rather than later.
Yeah, KPJ's one of those situations where I expect nothing from him. So if I get anything from him, it's just a bonus.
Yeah.
That's basically the situation that I have in mind.
And like in my mind at this point, there's as good a chance that he never plays for us again as there is that he plays for us again. You know, it's just been going on for so long.
I hate to agree with you, but I agree with you.
Yeah. Listen, we've all been following sports long enough. This isn't that uncommon of a story where something happens with the team and, you know, there's character stuff and you're just trying to figure out and the fans don't really know what's going on. And then someday you just get the notification that they've parted ways or something. So I hope not. They picked up his option, I think. Right. So clearly they're trying to make it work.
But then again, there's a reason why. There's a reason why he went 30th in the NBA draft when he was like a top five talent.
Yeah, I mean, and
it is what it is at this point.
And picking up the option is a vote of confidence that they're going to try to make it work somehow. You know, if they hadn't done that, I would think that the experiment was about over. So, but it'd be sure nice to see what he could add to this roster.
Absolutely, yeah. Especially with all these injuries, I mean, KPJ is not hurt, I think. From the accident, I think it's just all the stuff off the court that's the reason. I don't know. I just think it's weird that the Cavs haven't really said anything, but I think it's more of a behind the scenes thing where they might not be able to say anything about it. So maybe that's why there's been no updates.
Yeah, and it just might not be helpful. You know, it's one of those, maybe we don't need to know much more than we have already.
True.
That we already know.
But yeah,
know that we need some bodies so I don't watch Jetty jacking up 43s every night and going off the back of the rim. And you can't even blame him. Like there's literally, you know, there's nothing else to happen on that offense, but man, we could use some bodies. Cause I need to not watch Jetty go 1-for-12.
Again. Yeah. I'm afraid to watch tonight's game. And by the way, as I said earlier, we're recording this on Thursday night. So the Cavs play at Memphis tonight. I'm afraid to watch tonight's game. If Sexton is out as well,
mm-hmm.
It could be really ugly.
Right. I'll still want to see Okoro, so I'll probably still watch. You know, but oh man, that's rough.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even see how they can put up like 90 points. You'd need Okoro to score at least 20, Drummond to score 20, JaVale to make 5 threes just to put up 90. Yeah, I don't know. It's tough to be positive with so many injuries.
They should just feed Drummond every time down because I feel like every Drummond shot comes with about one, like every 4 points by Drummond comes with like two offensive rebounds because he misses his own shot and picks it back up. Like I want to see him go for like 60 and 40 tonight. Let's just feed it to him. Every
set records all over the place.
Yeah. I think he's the only player where his points and rebounds are like completely tied together. Like
the more misses he has, the more rebounds he has. So really it's like a positive set either way for Drummond.
Right.
I want to talk about Larry Nance. He's not the best player. He's averaging 8.5 points and 6.5 rebounds. But I feel like if I want any player to be super successful on this team, it's Larry Nance Jr. Without the young guys, I obviously want Colin Sexton to be successful, but just like what he does off the court, it's clear that he's one of the leaders on the team. And with Tristan Thompson gone, that is huge. This team needs a leader, especially that one that's with the team with Kalev out. He just brings so much to this team, even though the backstory might not say it.
It cracks me up when you hear national guys. Like I know that I think Bill Simmons did it and Hollinger did it. And I feel like I saw somebody else do it. Like talking about Larry Nance trades and stuff. Like, no, he's a lifer. Like they're not going to trade that.
He's a Cavs lifer like Dwayne Wade is.
Yeah, exactly. But like, he's not going to be traded. Like, he is a mascot as much as an NBA player for this team. And it cracks me up when people do that. Like, you just have no idea, like, what this team is about if you think they're going to trade him. But yeah, he's been spectacular. I love him in a smaller role. He's another guy that the injuries have kind of exposed a little bit. And you're like, okay, he's super useful in a limited role. And you add too much to his plate, it starts to get to be, you know, he starts to get exposed a little bit. So I'm excited to see him back in that role where he's leading the bench units. He's coming out, you know, he's finishing games, making all the little plays. And he's kind of a glue guy that keeps everything else going. And like you said, some leadership in that locker room where, I don't know that Drummond is a leader type of guy in that sense. You know, I think Nance is more the kind of guy who's going to be vocal, who's going to focus on the locker room, who's going to keep guys, pick them up and go with it. And so he's that veteran that can really do that. And as much as I love Kevin Love, like, I don't know what his presence exactly is on this team. It's a very strange, relationship with.
It is very strange. I mean, you can only lead so much when you're not playing the game. Like, I feel like in order to be like, hey, you have to do this, like, you should obviously be playing in practice. I mean, that's not Kevin Love's fault. Maybe he is legitimately hurt. I mean, obviously he is legitimately hurt. But if you're hurt and not participating, I feel like you can only lead so much.
And I think he's close with all the guys. I think like if you watch him and Sexton interact and you hear them talk about each other, they're clearly very close. And when Kevin gets frustrated with them, I think it's because he like they are close and he does mentor him a lot and try to keep him going. But Kevin's also very outward with his frustration, whether it was with, you know, Beeline last year, or, you know, we've heard what he said to Kobe Altman last offseason. And so I do think that makes for a little bit of a weird situation too. I don't want to feel like I'm talking down about Kevin Love, because I think that he's very good. I think he's good for locker room. I think guys look up to him. I think that they really respect him and think of him as like this core anchor that they can lean on quite a bit. But his kind of leadership is definitely different, more behind the scenes. And some of that other stuff maybe punctures it a little bit, whereas Nance is more kind of a rah-rah leader on the court. Yeah. You know, keep guys going.
I think
more of a presence.
Yeah, Kevin Love is a great leader, I'm sure, but I think he's a little bit too passive aggressive in the public eye. Like, if you go on Twitter and look up Kevin Love, like, being passive aggressive, there's like times where he like does this and he doesn't receive a pass, or he passes the ball to a wide open guy in the corner and he doesn't shoot and he does that. I think, like I said, Kevin Love could be a great leader, but I think he's a bit too passive aggressive to be a Larry Nance type.
Yeah, I think it maybe the better way to say it is he's a locker room leader more than an on-court leader, it seems like.
Great, great point.
He seems very close with these guys. They all look up to him. Like, it's clear. It's not like they don't like him. It's not like he doesn't like these guys. But on the court, the guy who I trust more to keep guys moving and not sulk or not get in arguments or not throw the ball at Jetty at the end of a half because he's mad at the coach or something, you know, that's going to be Nance. Whereas I think Love's probably taking guys under his wing in the locker room, showing them the ropes, keeping them motivated, telling them what to work on, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. That he's more of a locker room type leader than on court. I mean, that's definitely not a problem. It's not a bad thing. It's just
no, not at all.
Team has.
And I'm interested in what he's like coming back. I think the team is going to pass him by a little bit. I think we came into this year thinking he was going to be the best player or the focal point and the guy that got a lot of touches and the guy that was the engine. And I don't think that's going to be true when he comes back. I think we're going to pass that with Sexton, with Garland, even with Drummond, as being the guys that are the focal points of the team. And so I'm interested how Kevin Love handles that, because I think he has potential to be like a spectacular secondary, I don't want to call a role player, but, you know, not the focus of the offense, but the guy who does a lot of little stuff. I think that's probably a really, really great role for him. And I'm interested to see if he's willing to kind of jump into that role.
I feel like he might, because it will keep him more fresh, but then it might give him like a bet. I don't know. He already won a championship, so it's not like he's like still rooting or going for a ring. But if he is, say, in the starting lineup that has Sexton, Garland, Okoro, Love, Drummond, he's the third option, maybe fourth.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It'll be weird for him to go from like a star a few years ago to the fourth option on a rebuilding team. I don't know.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting.
And even on this rebuilding team, he was the headliner, right? Like, going into the season, he was still the guy we thought was going to be the headliner. And I don't think that's going to be true when he comes back. But to your point, he could stay fresher. He's going to be able to get a lot more easy buckets. He's not going to have to work for things nearly as much. And so I'll just be interested to see how that all kind of works out.
The good news is that he won't be taking away playing time from any of the younger guys being the power forward.
Dean Wade.
He might take away.
Wow. Dean Wade slander.
Okay, so as I was saying, but he might be taking away touches, which could be a problem. But then again, if he's spacing the floor the way Kevin Love should, than D Wade does currently, as you said, then that's going to only open things up more for Colin Sexton and Darius Garland and Okoro to get to the hoop, which is obviously his biggest strength right now is rookie season. So maybe it's like Kevin Love might not be touching the ball as much, but he'll be making things easier for the three younger guys.
And like, he's a great passer, and we've had a ton of success with like Nance and even some Drummond, you know, passing out of our big men. So maybe that's a role he could jump into as well, where he's not finishing as many plays, but he's kind of quarterbacking a lot of it as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a good Cavs talk. We just talked for 40 minutes about the Cavs being, this is like we've said multiple times, this is a huge step in the right direction that we just talked for 40 minutes and like 35 was like somewhat positive about the Cavs and their players.
Right. There's no big like disaster that we were talking about.
There's no like John Beilein's got in a fight in the locker room with Kevin Love.
None of this conversation was sluggish at all.
No, seriously. Which is, like we've said thousands of times already in this last 40 minutes, that is a huge step in the right direction. I feel like JB Bickerstaff, I know he hasn't had the track record record-wise, but he is like the perfect coach for this type of team.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's him or who they have doing the development work. You know, they still have some pretty highly touted assistants, but the growth we've seen from Sexton and Garland is just incredible. So that's always a good thing too. It's kind of like, you know, the Indians, you always trust them when they get a pitcher in a trade where you're like, I don't even care how good that pitcher is. They're going to make them awesome. Right.
You
like they just
Indians in trades tonight, by the way.
I'm sorry.
We went 42 minutes and you finally had to bring up Indians in trades.
But you know, like they get the benefit of the doubt on getting the most out of those guys, and so I hope that the Cavs can get to that point where when they draft a guy, you're saying, okay, I can trust that the organization is going to know how to get the most out of this guy,
and not be a player like one of the Ball brothers and say, hey, I'm not coming to Cleveland. Right.
And you know that helps you be an organization that players want to go to, right? I think that's really good. So. That's good as well.
Yeah. So Nam, thanks for joining us. Maybe we'll be on here in the next couple weeks, couple months, whatever it is, talk Cavs. Maybe it's about the draft. Maybe it's about playoffs. I don't know. Like we said, it all comes down to injuries. I feel like at full strength, this team could be pretty good.
Annoying. They could be really annoying for a bunch of teams, right?
In a good way. Oh yeah. For teams. Yes. But for fans, like very entertaining. Yes.
Oh
yes.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, so Nam, thanks for joining us. I appreciate you coming on, talking about the Cavs, not the Cabs, the Cavs.
Yes, for once.
But yeah, thanks for joining us, guys.
Great. Thank you.
The Korean War has sadly been known as the Forgotten War, but half a century earlier, the United States was locked in a bloody conflict in Asia that's been all but erased from the history books. Hi, I'm Alex Hastie, the host of Ohio versus the World, an American history podcast on the Evergreen Podcast Network. In our newest episode, we speak to experts about the Philippine-American War, America's first Asian counterinsurgency conflict. The heroes, the villains. We'll discuss President McKinley, Admiral Dewey, the vicious brutality of the fighting, and the scandals and war crimes that nearly sunk Theodore Roosevelt's presidency. Check out our show, Ohio versus the World, on the Evergreen Podcast Network for our new episode about America's most forgotten war. Now back to the show.